The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine, Friday the 15th of September 2023. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. We're with you for the next 3 hours with all the usual features for a Friday, including our Friday panel. They're going to be joining us very shortly. They're with us now. I'll introduce them shortly. We've got lots to talk about. We want your views throughout the hour, of course. WhatsApps and texts 086 6025000, 086 6025000. If you want to give us a call, 074 91 25000, 074 91 25000. And also, if you want to email, it's comments at highlandradio.com. And feel free to join us online and watch the show on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, across your devices, your smart TV, your Fire Stick and your mobile devices. And you can comment and enjoy the conversation, or join the conversation and enjoy it there as well. We already have Charlie, John Marie and many others online with us. Okay, let's say good morning to Maria Rush, fitness instructor with Rush Fitness and blogger at Maria Living Out Loud, and future podcaster as well, it seems. I'm just going to get into that space. Who's to say? Hey, Maria.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
We already have a veteran podcaster in Pat McCart. Good morning to you, Pat McCart, former managing editor of the Derry Journal Group newspapers and current newspaper columnist. And you still doing the pod, Pat?
I'm indeed, Greg. Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff. All right.
Two a week.
Two a week. Wow, fantastic. Brilliant commitment. Where can people find them? Because we had a call, actually. We had an inquiry from a listener that want more sort of Northwest-based podcasts. They have a few favourites and they were looking for more, just in case they haven't come across yours yet.
You can find them on my Facebook page or on Jude Collins' Facebook page. Myself and Jude, who's a former university lecturer, he's a regular podcaster and a regular broadcaster.
Brilliant stuff. Okay. Councillor Martin McDermott will be joining us shortly as well. Much of the conversation over the last couple of days has returned to RT. Obviously, they have the launch of their new Late Late Show tonight. Well, it's the new presenter, but they're still stuck in this funding crisis. They've lost 20 million euro. They've lost 20 million euro in taxpayers' money. They're already 34 odd million in the hole. A few decisions have been made to try and cut costs, because they've got the handout for funding from the government in the budget. What's your take on all of that, Pat McCart, and the RTE crisis, and I suppose its future, or the future of funding of broadcasting in Ireland?
I think RTE have made a terrible mess of it. The management have, you know. By the way, I'm going to say someone I don't think is going to go down particularly well, but I don't blame Ryan Tuberty in the least. Ryan Tuberty got paid. His agent did a deal. He declared every penny he earned to the revenue and all the rest of it. It was RTE. Actually, I was going to use a term there, but made a mess of the whole thing. But to answer your question, Greg, I take it RTE, the management, they had spent $5,000 on flip-flops. There was a slush fund. There was a barter account, and nobody seems to know what the hell was going on. So, Greg, basically, they need to get their house in order. They're a public body, almost a semi-state body, and there's nobody that can go on like that, where people, there's no accountability, or did seem to be very little. There seemed to be ad hoc arrangements every which way. They were paying people like Tuberty at one stage, 800,000 a year, or nearly 900,000. Joe Duffy's on something like 350,000. What do you call the guy? It's on the afternoon account. His name escapes me at the moment. Someone on 300,000 as well. They're way above what anybody would normally earn. Like 150,000 a year would be a very good salary for anybody in this day and age. So I think RTE, the days of the handouts and, you know, the government just hand them here's another 50 million. I think they need to get their house in order before the government should step in.
Yeah, but the government are going to step in. You talk about reform and change.
They have to step in.
Yeah, you talk about reform and change. RTE is still seeking a photographer. This is a person whose only job is to take pictures on the set of Fair City. They'll get 60,000 euro per year. And I am decent with my phone. I'm not going to lie to you. They only have to work 20 hours a week. Now, this that job is still advertised. It's still being sought. It will be filled. This at the same time as they're announcing a new recruitment freeze and also talking about maybe voluntary redundancies down the line. I mean, that's not reform. It's really just more of the same. But Kevin Backhurst seems to be able to conduct the Oireachtas committee. They like him.
Yeah, but you see, he's got one massive advantage. He's coming in. He's a fresh. He hasn't got any history. Can't be held responsible for this. The people who can be held responsible are not coming in, and I presume they will not come in the future. The two main people were the former chief executive and director general, and the other one was the chief financier and his financial officer. And as far as I know, neither of those have come in. So the way it's going to go now, Greg, I think there's going to be a bit of stalemate, but I think the government are going to have to step in and hand up over about maybe 50, 60 million in the next couple of days. But they'll have the fig leaf of saying we've got reform.
Yeah, exactly. But it is just a fig leaf, and the public are very switched on now, and they can see it for what it is. It's a bit of cling film. Maria Walsh, what do you... Maria, one of these days, I'm just going to get both of your names right at the same time. Maria Walsh, Maria Rush of Rush Fitness.
We'll have to both be on.
I know. Yeah. Come here. What do you think of all this? I mean, you know, as a, we're all consumers of this product.
I think as consumers of any product, you expect quality and you expect transparency and you expect to know where your money's going and what it's been spent on. And you expect a certain level of product when you buy something. And technically, as consumers, that's what we're doing. We are buying our TV license. And we're buying into what's been presented to us. I think what has happened, and you mentioned it already, Greg, is that the public have become quite tuned into where the money has been going and the discretionary spending that has been happening that has been, it's quite disgusting, to be honest, you know, in the current state of affairs, whether it's the cost of living crisis or even just from a business point of view, you cannot throw money around on one hand and then cry of poverty on the other hand. You can't do that. I think a lot of us, speak for myself, RTE, I don't watch RTE. I have no, the toy show is the only time of the year it is switched on in my house. I've always paid my TV license and I see it, I get why it is needed. But at the same time that I look at it and think, there are plenty of other broadcasters operating in this country as a business, as a viable business. They are paying their wages, they're paying whatever needs paid. Their expenditure is balancing at the end of the year with their income, and they're doing it through advertising means only. So why can RTE not do the same? So I kind of am at the stage where I feel like the public are done pouring money into something that is not respecting us as consumers. And that's my take on it at the moment anyway.
But you're still at this point, and I'm not calling you out as if to say whether you are or not, but I mean, still at this point, you're content to pay the TV license. You understand why it's there and...
I'm not. I've never been content to pay a TV license ever because I have a huge issue with the fact that it goes to one particular place. And yes, they did reform it a few years ago and tell us that it's now digital. Like, it's not just if you're watching RTE.
But well, there's 20 million that goes around the entire independent sector. And it's not for general funding. It's to support the creation of certain programs or podcasts that are in addition to what's already there. So you spread that out amongst the 40-odd independent outlets. And, you know it's nothing like the hundreds of millions that RTE get.
But when you then see the conversation the last few days where what's going to have to happen if we can't get this money now is we're going to have to reduce our news coverage. We're going to have to reduce our production. It's almost like a threat that they're going to bring that standard down even further. The issues that are arising in RTE are not and have not come from.
The problem is I don't think people are going to buy the fact that we're going to have to cut down our news process when you're paying 60,000 euro for a photographer to just take pictures of Fair City.
Unless they
sort that stuff out, you see, you can't come and go, oh, well, it's because you go, well, you know, and no one still knows whether or not they have this access to this private members club in London. Kevin Backhurst, who's been there for, 8 weeks now, still doesn't know over it. The fellow in charge of finance that was before the Oireachtas Committee says, well, the invoice hasn't come in, but I'm not sure if we're still members. That kind of stuff I don't think is acceptable. Councillor Martin McDermott, what do you think? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, Maria. Good morning, Pat. Yeah, I think that, you know, the public have certainly lost a lot of faith in RTE. There's no doubt about that. And I think that it's going to be difficult for people to get that faith back to pay their TV licence. I think that's going to take quite a bit of time. I think that, you know, it's still an important part of our Irish, and to be able to, you know, to have a national station. I think it's important to have a national station. I think the government will probably, you know, have to fund it in some manner. But at the same time, if any business was run in the same manner as RTE, it wouldn't be in business today. So, you know, I think there has to be big, big questions asked to the people that are at the top level of RTE as to what they were actually doing and how this type of money has been spent on, you know, scandalous things like, as Maria said, flip-flops or Pat, you know, things like that. It's you know, how do you expect people that are struggling to find the money to pay a TV licence, and when they hear of what it's been spent on, it's very, very difficult to tell people that they have to pay a licence for what was going on at RTE. And I think that's going to be a very, very difficult hurdle that RTE is going to have to get over to get people to pay that TV licence again, because I think they've lost faith in RTE and they've lost faith in the people that's running RTE, and I think that's going to be very hard to get back.
It seems most likely we'll end up with a household charge collected by revenue by early 2025. That's what Leo Varadkar is looking towards, whereby the funding perhaps might be spread more evenly. That being said, RTE is losing big money now, so it can't really lose any further licence fee money, so it's still going to struggle. So it is going to have to reform, or it's going to fall. But what do you think the reaction, Martin, will be to this household digital household charge, where everyone, it'll just be deducted by revenue, everyone will have to pay it, there'll be no resisting it, because it'll come out of your wages or your payments one way or other. Is maybe that's the only way, that's the future, if we are going to fund public service broadcasting?
Possibly, but I mean, it's again, Greg, it's how that's going to be delivered, and how and exactly what way that charge is going to happen. Is it just going to be per one household? There was talk that charge would be on devices and on, you know, tablets or whatever, because you can watch TV anywhere now on your phone or on your iPad or your laptop. So, you know, I think there's a long discussion needs to be had on that first before we would, you know, say that will be the way forward for the government or for RTE. I think that, you know, there has to be a lot of building done before any of that comes out, because I don't feel that the people at this particular moment in time will be happy to fund any of those stations until at least there's a good board there, and sort of a year maybe down the line to see where things are going and see has things changed. And I think that the next year for RTE is going to be very, very, very important.
I've heard the argument for public service broadcasting from everyone. Everyone seems to think we should have it, Pat McCarthy. And even in comments this morning, Taoiseach Leo Varadkar said it's really important to protect democracy. Which to me, I don't know precisely what he meant by that. But what is public service broadcasting? Like, is giving Sean Quinn a platform last night to flog his book, for the most part unchallenged, is that public service broadcasting? Is a journalist saying to Dara O'Brien, well, you've sorted out the defective concrete blocks in Donegal now, what are you going to do about Dublin? Is that public service broadcasting? Like, what is actually public service broadcasting?
Well, public service broadcasting, in my understanding, is supposed to be reflect all views impartially. Greg, Maria said something I sort of slightly disagree with. She says she never watches RT, and fair enough, I understand that totally, that's fair enough. But the point I think about, do we want to reach a situation where we have a sort of Fox News? You know, if there's no such thing as public service broadcasting, it's right, at the end it becomes totally commercialized. And look at the, if you want to take it to the, what would you say, the ultimate point, like America's got Fox News and it's got all CNN, it's got very polarized. RT, like the BBC, is a public service broadcaster, though it's slightly different from the BBC. BBC has got no advertising, we do. But the RT, there's an onus on them to produce programs that are fair and impartial. Now, there is also, maybe when I listen to News Talk, I think News Talk has moved way to the right. The George Hook and various others who promulgated views that I certainly, as a left-wing person, didn't agree with. So RT is answerable and accountable. Mm. And RT does some very, very good programs.
Well, let me just say, you know, then, Pat, just in relation...
You said, you're being very cynical about Sean Quinn. Sean Quinn has been as entitled to give his point of view. And when you consider the fact that he's been jailed, he's been vilified and all the rest of it. So last night, it's probably... No, I didn't see it, but I presume he was there on the flog his book.
Yeah, well, he does have a book out, so it's just a happy coincidence. But I take your point. And it was a question, although you're quite right in pointing out there was some cynicism in there. So where are the George Hook voices in RT there? You say that it should reflect all people's positions and points of view. The RT have an arrangement where they have access every single morning to a government minister. It's quite clear that some of those ministers can choose what questions they're asked and not, i.e., I don't want to name names, but it's really, really quite clear that they're not. So really, is RTE de facto, and maybe there's no shame in this game, it is the platform where the government gets a relatively free ride. So where are the George Hooks, not the perfect example, where are the Ivan Yates people to question government?
Mary Lou McDonald had a 10-minute slot on RT, or 15-minute slot. Or I don't think, I'm not here to speak for Sinn Féin, but I don't think Sinn Féin can whinge too much. They get a fair old run on RT. But I take your point, by the way, you're dead right. There's sometimes I think government ministers get a very easy ride, and they're never available when something really hot comes up, which I find amazing. But having said that, on balance, I think RT does a good job, and I think it plays a very important role in cementing our society. So I'm not saying I'm delighted about paying my TV license, but I will pay it, and I have no objection to paying it.
Maria,
every people get things wrong.
Maria, do you want to come in there?
Yeah, I think just on the point of RT not watching it, it's not that I have any issue with it. It's the fact that I find the programme and brittle on it. I don't see anything that makes me want to stop with my remote control and watch it. If I sit down at the weekend with my kids to put on the TV, there's never anything coming up on RT that we want to watch as a family. So I suppose it depends on personal taste as well. But for us, there's nothing really that comes on apart from the odd prime time, which can be brilliant. And then, as I said, the toy show. From the point of view of paying for services, most people have no issue paying for Netflix, for Disney Plus, for Sky, whatever other platform they're streaming. I don't think that paying for the license is the issue for some people. I think it's the fact that when it comes to RT, is it giving the public what they want? Is it giving us a variety of high quality shows? Is it able to produce shows that it can then sell on internationally to try and bring in income as well, like BBC, Channel 4, other even... any other, think of the shows, the likes of Derry Girls and things like that, those are being created, produced, and then being able to be sold to Netflix and things. So I do think there is an issue of quality as well. And I suppose it's personal opinion, it's personal taste, but I have yet to find something that makes me stop my remote control.
I'd love them. I mean, even if they went out and I said it on the programme before, back new talent from outside the pale. You know what I mean? And not Ara Bagari kind of stuff, which it seems they often pull out of the West of Ireland. But Councillor Martin McDermott, from your perspective as a member of a government party, what do you get a sense that, you know, maybe RTE's fair, that they give the government a decent platform and that maybe it's lacking on... in other areas? I don't know. Like, it just, as I say, in the interests of absolute balance, like when you... are you satisfied with the news policies and output from RTE?
Well, I suppose being from Donegal, Greg, there's been many a time that we've said, you know, we don't get the coverage up here on RTE that we should get. We tend to only get coverage in Donegal when it's a bad story, when something happens, when, you know, it makes it look like we're the worst place in the world that you could drive on and all these types of things. I don't think that we have ever got the coverage. Take the likes of Kerry or Galway or Cork. You know, those counties would have got a hell of a lot more coverage tourism-wise and you know, documentary-wise than what Donegal would have got. And I would have always thought that we certainly don't get the coverage that other places got. But I think I agree with Marie. I think everybody is you know, most people would pay their TV license. But I'd still think that the next number of months for RTE are vitally important. And, you know, they do give a good service, particularly, you know, I was talking to people yesterday about sport, you know, the soccer, Ireland soccer team, Ireland rugby team, the GAA. It does get a lot of coverage with an RTE,
I don't know.
To be fair.
I mean, you've kind of really picked on a dodgy one there, considering that to see some of the big games, you actually have to pay GEA Go for them, of which RTE is a major stakeholder, and the former Director General was also the CEO. So I take your point, but I think Virgin Media are doing quite good Champions League coverage, rugby coverage, off the back of advertising revenue. But as I say, I fully take your point. But finally, before we take a break and move on, is it not the case, though, that the public, right, the public have stopped paying their TV license over the crazy money executives are getting paid really big money and don't really know what's going on? The huge money presenters are getting, we know now there is no other options for them. I think Pat said 150,000 is pretty generous, but it'd be a 50% pay cut for many of them, if not more. 60 grand to take a few photos in the fair. Those are the changes that the public want to see. I don't think those are the changes that the politicians want to see, but I think there's a disconnect with what politicians think the public want and what the public actually want. Maria, that's the type of reform that will get people paying their TV license again, but that is not the type of the reform that we're going to see. A streamlined executive on reasonable wages. And do you know what? If that's what they can get in Germany, let them go there. We'll get someone else that will do it for the money that we will pay. And presenters that are on wages where maybe they can start to understand what's really going on in this country and be more reflective of it.
Well, out of 2021, out of 1,800 staff in RTE, nearly 1,300 were on less than 80,000 a year. So there's a huge disparity there in the where the money is going. I have no issue with talent being paid based on the reviews of their shows or the listenership or whatever. And someone mentioned Soho House earlier on. I get the concept of actually RTE thinking this would be a good idea. I've been in Soho House myself. It's a fantastic space for creatives, for meetings, for things like that, if it's being used appropriately. But to learn that it's been, the membership is there and it's not being used, that's a waste of money. That's nonsense. That's the kind of thing that will annoy people. We will always have people sitting saying, oh, well, he shouldn't be getting paid that. She shouldn't be getting paid that. Do the job and see. Sometimes it can be quite difficult. I do fully agree, though, that someone on over 150,000-160,000 for presenting TV, I don't get where that comes from when you consider that some of the world leaders don't even get paid that for leading full nations and full countries. I just think that trust, and Martin mentioned that there, trust, if you know where your money is going and you can trust the people who are running an organization or a business or an institution, then that's fine. When you start to doubt that your money is going on flippant expenditure that is unnecessary and quite irresponsible, to be honest, that's where we have an issue. And it would be lovely to see a board that comes in now that is able to take control, streamline things down, create quality service, continue providing news, continue providing sports coverage, create things in the arts. All of those things are so, so important to us as a country, but they have to be done by people that we trust.
Last word to you, Pat. I suppose, as I say, I think the reform will be made that will satisfy the Oireachtas Committee, but I don't think it will satisfy the public unless something drastic happens.
Greg, to follow on from your own point, a couple of years back, I remember on the same day, it was revealed that a student nurse who had been working something like 5 12-hour shifts, I think it was during the COVID thing, was on 23,000 a year. RTE's Ray Darcy, I think his salary was 330-something thousand a year. No, let's get real here. You know, who was the most important and so on. And I think to follow on your point again, I think the public have had enough of this. Ryan Tuberty was on 440,000 a year for what? Presenting a one-hour show in the morning. And then on Friday he presented the Late Show. And at one stage when he was, I'm not 100% certain, but he was near 900,000 a year at one stage. Like, that's, those salaries in this country are insane. And no wonder the public are, you have to be very careful of the language used, but the people are totally pissed off with this. And I think it's time RTE got their ducks in a row and sort of got real.
I'm not even going to give you a verbal warning for that, let alone a yellow. You're okay there, Pat. Good man. We'll be back with more from our guests and you after the break. We're in the company of Maria Rush, fitness instructor with Rush Fitness and blogger at Maria Living Out Loud. Pat McCart, former managing editor of the Derry Journal Group newspapers and current newspaper columnist, and Councillor Martin McDermott, chair of the Mica Redress Committee and member of Fianna Fáil as well, of course. Donegal County Councillor faced criticism from Minister McConnell because of difficulties in transitioning people from the old defective block scheme to the new scheme. Now, the council had come out, the CEO was on this programme talking about the complicated nature of that process and the amount of people that are, that it's, you know, it's taken an awful lot of time with the resources and it's relatively complex. Is the council too caught up in bureaucracy and what could be done to streamline the process? Firstly, do you think the call, Martin McDermott, do you think the call from the minister was fair and an understanding of the situation?
Well, look, it is. There's a lot of people, Greg, at this particular moment in time that are stressed and that are waiting on information to come. The re-evaluation between the old scheme and the new scheme isn't something that can happen overnight. It is a bit of a process that will take, and to be fair to the council, that was made very clear when the new enhanced scheme came in, that it would take a number of weeks to re-evaluate 1,300 applications, to recalculate those applications, and to get the paperwork done and the T's crossed and the I's dotted of the change from one scheme. So, you know, that is taking time. We're lucky enough now that we're at a point. We had a Mica Redress Committee meeting yesterday, concrete block meeting, The council are ready to come back to. There's 80 people that have come back on for re-evaluation. Those 80 are now evaluated and ready to come back out, which will be out within the next number of days to those families to allow them to move forward. Category 1s, Category 2 and Category 3. So the Category 1s are people that have finished their works and have, you know, paid out the money and haven't got it back yet. Category 2s are people that are in the process of rebuilding as we speak. Category 3s are people that had their Stage 2 applications submitted to Donegal County Council, some of those for quite some time, but hadn't got confirmation to move forward. So those three categories of people will move forward within the next number of weeks. They will have to then submit a commencement notice within 7 days of starting the rebuild. And then that gets the clock ticking on the 60 weeks of a rebuild time frame that was set by the department. So, you know, I can understand, yes, that people are frustrated, and I totally get that. I get that all the time, and people are in constant contact with me all the time. But on the flip side of that, there is quite a lot of work to do to get that re-evaluations all done. And, you know, we're at a point now where over the next, particularly the next couple of weeks, 4 or 5 weeks, we'll be out of that transition and most people will be starting to move forward and we'll be starting to, you know, deal with people coming onto the new scheme.
Yeah, it's not really fully clear how you get onto the scheme at all, even in terms of, you know, getting your property visually assessed, or even then how you go even beyond that. And we're talking like, you know, 60, 70, 80 houses and hopefully and all that kind of stuff, which is facts. It's not nonsense. It's fact. Then we talk about the so many thousands of people that are affected by this, and the near on 3,000 that have signed up an EU petition on it. I mean, it's like we're talking tiny numbers here, aren't we? And I don't see the floodgates opening. And I'm not trying to be negative here, Martin, but what we're talking about here is fantastic, the relief maybe for a few dozen families, but given the scale of this, it's really troublesome that this is the type of language that we're still being forced to use. It's not. I know you're not choosing to use this language, you're only stating the facts.
Yeah, absolutely, and I mean, look, there's about 1,300 100 people to date that have entered the scheme. Since the new scheme came in July, there's about 50 new applications that have came in. Out of those 50, 48 actually had to go back to people because the right information wasn't there. So, you know, we do need clear information for homeowners. It's something that we discussed yesterday that's going up on the council's website today. Very clear, straightforward. Yeah. What they need to apply to the scheme.
Can I ask you just a quick question in relation to that, Martin? Like, at what point, right, when we're having this conversation, do the government say, and most people might disagree, they say, we've provided here a multi-billion euro scheme and only 50 people have applied for it and only 4% of them managed to even get the application right. There mustn't be a big problem in Donegal at all, or else there must be no urgency. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it's not that long before we start hearing that narrative that the people get blamed rather than the scheme, because 50 is a drop in the ocean. Like,
yeah, it is, but that's 50 that, you know, on top of the 1300 that's already applied. Yeah. So, you know, there's nearly 1400 applied at the minute. You know, some of those things are simple little things, and that's where people need the help. You know, to make sure that the right documentation is there, to get them over the line and get them started in the process. The process is different now with the new enhanced scheme, where someone gets their eligibility that they're the principal private resident holder of that house. They also need a building condition assessment, which will be done by any professional now. They also need to assert that they're in compliance with planning permission. Which they'll get from an architect. Those three things are the starting point. That then goes to the housing agency. The housing agency then will take over from there, and then they will have to meet the damage threshold. If they meet the damage threshold, then the housing agency will take that forward, do whatever tests that needed to be done, and come back with a remedial option, plus the grant amount that homeowner is entitled to, for whether it's a demolition and rebuild or whether it's a remediation option.
Yeah, complex, Maria. And as soon as we sort of start talking about this, you just like, you wonder who has the will or the ability or the time, and it will take money to sort of start entering in that process. Like, Martin is across this, but even as he explained it as clear as is possible, you find yourself going, right, what happens after stage three? And as I say, Martin, you know that's not any criticism. It's the complexity of it.
I think the mind boggles at this point. And I do think it's very important that we don't... The anger and the rage and the upset that is in the community about this cannot always be focused in on the people who are in the council offices trying to fix things, because they're working off procedures. And it's so frustrating that I'm speaking here as somebody who is affected by it myself. Family members, friends, I'm stuck in the middle of it, unfortunately. And I think what's happening is that the hurdles that you have to jump over to get to the point where you get to the starting point of starting to demolish the house and starting to go into that process, that the hurdles are incredible. Yes, there is. And I mean, if you go onto the citizens' information or any of the council websites, there's great information about how you can go about being brought onto the scheme. I think where the problem seems to be arising at the moment is that when the council has done their work and the forms are in from the families, everything's done to a certain point, they've had their engineers out, they've had their tests, they know this is the process that they're going to have to go into. It's sent to the housing agency. And then it's, I know from looking yesterday at a few people I would follow on Twitter or X or whatever you call it, they're being told now it'll be the middle of July next year before they get a response. So that's almost another year. So then they're looking to send out more people to consider what situation or what the stage of that person's situation is. And you're back to square one. You're back to having to convince engineers and convince people this is the problem. I don't know how much longer we can prolong this. I think we're getting to the point where it's taking years. There was one particular person yesterday, and she put up a post that her case was with the housing agency. It met the damage threshold. But since she made her original application, things have diminished so badly in her house. It is falling down around her. She's now no longer eligible for the original. And she has to reapply and start all over again because her house is now no longer damaged. It's now needing demolished. Then you've got people saying...
And then she could go through that process again and she still doesn't know actually if the foundations will be included. So,
and that's what was going to be my next point. You know, it has to be an all or nothing here. We cannot tell people, go ahead, knock your house down, but build another house on the same concrete, on the same foundations that were put in when you built your first house. There is such a problem with that. Look, it is just, it is a minefield. It has to be done properly. There have to be procedures in place. Of course. But if you look around, I drove home last night and on the 5 kilometre stretch from the main road to my house, I live in the countryside, there's something like 18 or 19 houses. And it's not a case like 5 or 6 years ago where you see, oh, there's cracks in that house. I wonder if that's, are those settling cracks? So they are literally falling down. There is one house that, and you're looking thinking, that's not going to survive the winter. There are families living in those houses. They have mortgages in those houses. When those houses are knocked down, they'll still have mortgages on the previous house. Mm. It is just, enough's enough. I just feel like we're talking about this all the time. Yep. And I would like to see, as you said, Greg, someone just step up and say, here's what's going to happen. Here's the money. Fix it. Mm. Go and make the procedures about how to fix it, not how to prove that you have a problem.
You know, Pat McCart, and it sounds so easy to say, but this is going to be a multi-billion euro problem. The government have conceded that. It's going to be multi-annual. It's going to be 10, 15, 20, 25 years. It's going to be multi-generational. If you're going to do it right. Like, you know what I mean? I don't understand why it's designed in such a way that I think people after 10 years of this wonder, can I actually even bear to go through this process?
I was listening to Martin, and I know Martin is a very decent fella, but I was losing the world you love. You know, and the minutiae that now, Greg, as far as I recall, the first committee to look into this was set up in 2016. It's now 2023. So that's 7 years. There are between 6,000 and 7,000 people affected by this. And I met a colleague of Martin's at a social function in Derry a couple of months ago, and he told me the scheme is up and running. Now, if there's between six and 7,000 people affected, and apparently there's only about 35 people so far have had their houses actually remedied, you know, it's a very, very slow scheme. And Greg, as you say, apparently we started off, the government, I think, originally made available 15 or 20 million to have a remedy scheme. By the time now, apparently we're talking somewhere between 3.5 billion and 4 billion to remedy this. That's probably conservative. So, Greg, by the way, I have lost totally the understanding of where the scheme is going. I haven't a clue anymore because I just don't know. One scheme said it would do this, and the bottom line now seems to be that if you've got foundations, you've got a problem. If you've got your house knocks down, you have a different set of rules. If your house can be remedied, there's a different set of rules. Now, I think I would lose the world to live if I was living in a house with Micah and all these rules and regulations were coming in. And I think a lot of people are just sort of got to the stage, what under God is this government doing?
Yeah, there's a little bit of gaslighting too for people, I think, be it intentional or not, in that they're being told this is a 100% redress scheme, but the majority of people, it is not the majority. And Martin, I'll just put it to you before a break. Was it said at that meeting yesterday by a DCB, a defective concrete block facilitator, that, and this is someone who engages with people, presumably, that people can't afford this scheme. They actually can't afford to go on this scheme. And then there's other scenarios where people are older and all that type of stuff. I mean, is the sense out there, or maybe even you want to talk to it, the truth be told, for the majority, they can't afford to engage in this scheme?
Yeah, look, there's a cap there of 420,000, Greg, and that cap includes your ancillary fees of 15 and 5. So there's a rebuild cost of a possible 400,000. Now you don't have to take the ancillary costs, and you can have a full rebuild cost of 420,000. That is according to the day's figures. SCSA have released those figures. That should cover a rebuild somewhere in the region of about 2,300 square foot house. Anything above that, yeah, it's certainly not going to cover it. Anything below that, it should be very close to covering it, dependent, I suppose, on what finishes and what level that you take the house to. But, you know, there are people that are in, you know, very, very difficult circumstances, particularly people, elderly people that, you know, don't want to get into the position where they want to rebuild a house at 60 or 70 years of age. And I totally understand that. But it's, you know, to be fair to the process, I think, you know, the process and the new enhanced scheme will certainly be a lot more simpler to get. You know, the stage two part of that is gone now. So you just have to submit a remedial works plan and you're ready to go and start your work. So that element of it will be a lot speedier than what the old scheme was. But, you know, for a lot of people, and you're right, the facilitators are doing great work on the ground at the minute in both Letterkenny and Inishowen, and they're dealing with people every day of the week. And that's where, I suppose, the banks and all those other institutions.
And what are they saying? Are they saying that they're inundated by people who simply cannot afford it? That is what the frontline staff are saying. They're inundated with people that cannot afford to work with the scheme.
Yeah, one of the facilitators yesterday did mention and said that like she had about 140 families come to her in the month of August, while quite a number of those have had difficulties, particularly getting finance from the banks and to find whether they have enough money, whether the costs are going to cover their rebuild. Because even, you know, the costs are coming in even above the rates now that SEEI had put down. So that's worrying for people that's going to rebuild their houses. But I think the most important thing, Greg, for us now is that we get
the lines just dropped there. I just want to wait till it recovers, Martin. Just stay with us. It will bounce back. 086 60 25,000, by the way, if you wish to get in touch with the show. We'll take a quick break and we'll finish those comments from Martin McDermott and go on to our last topic with our guests after these. Okay, you welcome back to the programme. I think, Councillor McDermott, you're going to say one thing just before that, and then the line dropped a little bit. One important thing...
My line dropped there. I'm not sure what I was saying, but...
Well, that's all right. That's all right. We'll move on. But, like, I'm not a body language expert, right? And I know you're all across this subject, and I know you deal with the public. I know that you're like an iceberg. You know, the tip is what we see. I know you do an awful lot of stuff below the sea, so to speak. And you know, I know a lot of councillors do that too. And I've made this that point on this programme before. But, like, can you work with it? Can you continue to highlight things like, well, there's one element to the scheme that's not there now and things are a little bit easier? I mean, can you continue to push this? Do you have the strength to continue to push this and try and push it as a... without calling it out for what it is?
Yeah, well, I think the important thing, Greg, is, I mean, like, we have to give people hope, and, I mean, we have to allow...
But is it real hope, Martin? And I mean that with absolute respect. Do we have to give people real... Like, it has to be hope that can be delivered, yeah?
Yeah, and I think there is hope that can be delivered. I think there really is. You know, there's a lot of people out there that just wants to get their houses fixed. There's a lot of people contacts me on a regular basis that wants to move forward and get their homes fixed. And I think it's our job now to the scheme there, it's not going to change until whether there's a new government comes on in a year and a half's time. So it's there now. We have to make it work. And my job as a public representative, as a local representative, and the same with all my colleagues at council and I'm sure at national level as well. But our job now is to get this through the council as quick as we can, get the applications out as quick as we can, and help as many people as we can.
And finally, you know that people on the ground are working really hard. I take it you wouldn't agree with your colleague, Councillor Farran, that Charlie McConnell chucked the council under the bus on this. You wouldn't agree with his statement in relation to that, given that you know how hard people are working at council level on this?
Well, look, I mean, Minister McConnell was entitled to make his point, and he feels that the thing is not moving quick enough, and that's fair enough. You know, I see on a daily basis, and I work very closely with council officials and council staff on this, because, you know, they're probably sick to the back teeth of me ringing in every day, five times a day, asking questions and saying, what about such an application? What about such an application? Can we get that application pushed on? Because that's an elderly person, and they need help and they need this. You know, so I see the background work that goes on there, and there is a lot of background work goes on. But, you know, as I said yesterday, Greg, you know, there needs to be timelines, and we need to get the process right here, because over the last 8 or 9 weeks, the information coming to homeowners has not been what it needs to be. Mm. People need to know what's happening. People need to get the information. People need to know timelines. People need to have an idea when their application is going to come out, because they have other things to do, like getting builders in place, like getting finance in place. A lot of other things has to happen. Mm. So it's vitally, vitally important that we get the message right and that we let people know exactly what's happening.
Yeah, and Pat McCart, messaging... and we'll stick with this now because we only have a minute really effectively. Pat McCart, messaging is so important. Communication is so important, isn't it? In anything in life, but particularly, so I think, from the powers that be.
Greg, well, I like Maria, I've got members of my family who've got affected by this. And when I'm driving along now, I look up and say, oh, look at the web cracks. It's not there. This is a major, major problem. And I don't know whether it's the council or the government, but somebody's not doing their job when it comes to communication, because everybody is totally bewildered by what's going on.
Yeah, I am actually, like, I'm not disappointed with the council's communication on it, to be honest with you. You know, we've had senior members come in and sit here in front of us, and I wouldn't like to be dealing with the system that they're dealing with, in fairness, and I've been on the record in saying that. They're being, being given a Rubik's Cube that can't be fixed sometimes, I feel. Maria, I don't know if you believe that to be a fair assessment just in the last 30 seconds.
No, I do 100%. I do feel that the council are dealing on the ground with the people that they know, with their neighbours, their friends, their families. Some of our council members are affected by this themselves. I think the buck stops at the top. It stops with the government, and until the government take it seriously to start, which I don't think they have, to be honest, until they take it seriously and give our local councils the means to fix the problem, how are they supposed to fix it?
Maria,
and people are broken, and
Maria,
that's it.
So, and that's it. People are broken. Maria Rush, thank you very, very much for your time this morning. I do really appreciate it. Have a lovely day. Pat McCart, it's always a pleasure. And we really do appreciate your time. Thank you so very much indeed. And last but certainly not least, Councillor Martin McDermott, thank you very much for your time. We'll chat again. See you soon. Take care. Okay, that was our Friday panel. Thank you for all of your comments coming in on the topic so far. We will get to those after we take a break for the news and obituary notices.